Welcome to everyone joining us here tonight on the Kings County Radio Club's Technical Question and Answer Net. My name is Roy. My call sign is AC2GS, and I will be your net control operator for this informal net. I will be your host, and Bob KD2NVB will be my co-host on this exploration into amateur radio technology. The purpose of this net is to provide a platform for discussion and to offer our answers as well as promote a conversation among all participants of this net. The club maintains an archive of these technical nets on its web pages, and we also offer original articles and reviews on many topics covered during these technical nets. We also offer a streaming service for those who cannot receive our repeater signal. Just point your browser to stream.kc2rc.com. We also have an Echo Link node available for use. Just point your Echo Link application to the node kc2rc-r. This net is scheduled for the second and fourth Wednesday of each and every month. All of this information can also be found on our club website, which is www.kc2rc.com. Members as well as non-members are welcome to participate, although we do appreciate it when our fellow hams join our club. And as always, an application is readily available on our club's website. No question is too simple. No question is dumb. All wisdom begins with the asking of questions. If you have a question, it deserves to be answered. Our format tonight will be to ask for participants to check in only if they have questions or comments for this net. Please give us your first name, your call sign, whether you have a question or a comment. This net will then address each question in order, and I will try to provide a cogent answer, and Bob KD2NVB will join in as well. If any other licensed listener has any further facts or opinions, they will be free to break in with the word comment and, when recognized, offer their knowledge or experiences to us all. If anyone has any suggestions for future topics of interest, please let us know either here or use our email address, which is tech@kc2rc.com. And now I would like to introduce my co-host for this net, Bob KD2NVB. Good evening, Bob.
Hey, Roy. Good evening, everybody out there. Forward to a nice net. It's been a little while. Back to you, Roy.
Yes, indeed. It has been a bit of a time. We took the last month off because of the religious holidays and scheduling problems with the general meeting. Hopefully, this made people wonder, where were we, and has them back here tonight. Unhopefully, they completely forgot about us, and they're doing something else. We will soon find out. I hope for the best, but I'll settle for the rest. This is once again AC2GS. My name is Roy. This is the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. We're open for business. If you're out there and you have a question or a comment for tonight, please hit that push to talk and introduce yourself. Well, it looks like our 1 month hiatus didn't improve participation or you know, people remembering us or people even coming by. We'll try again. We won't try too many times because you know, if no one wants to you know, say anything, do anything, what have you, then we'll kind of call it short. But once again, I continue to be AC2GS. I am Roy, and this is the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. If anyone out there has any questions or comments, topic for discussion, what have you, please hit that push to talk and introduce yourself. Once again, this is AC2GS. Earlier today, I got an email from William who told me that during last night's technical net, the Echo Link or the radio was sending Morse code signals. Well, we just had those Morse code signals. They basically just identify the repeater station as KC2RC. We've kind of always had them. They're put into the controller. When we set up the controller more than 10 years ago, we set it to repeat the call sign in Morse code every so often. Other than going into the controller and changing the setting, there's nothing much you can do about it. You're legally required to ID the control, ID the repeater, so that's the way we've chosen to do it. So it had nothing to do with my Echo Link or my connection or my radio. It's all from the controller at the repeater site. Anyway, once again, I continue to be AC2GS. This continues to be a very quiet episode of the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net, but we are open for business, at least for the next 5-10 minutes, it appears. So again, if anyone has any questions, comments, topics for discussion, your time is my time. So please hit that push to talk and give me the question and ID yourself. Once again, this is still AC2GS. This is still theoretically the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. And I don't know what to tell anyone who might actually be listening out there. This is not a broadcast. This is a net. So we kind of live and die by participation, by other people kind of interacting here. I try my best to answer questions or at least cite decent references and try to help people along. It's relatively successful over there in Limar, where it's been going on for 44 years. So, and we actually get people to talk back and forth, which is a nice thing to do for a net. So I don't know what to tell anyone here. It's not like I change personalities over when I moved to Limar on Sunday nights. So it's probably just a matter that most people are not used to tuning in on the repeater Wednesday night. So there's probably next to no one out there, and so there's no real reason for anyone to respond to me since they can't hear me without a radio. So I don't know what to tell people. We'll give it another 5 minutes or so, and if we get to the same kind of silence that we're getting now, then we'll just call it a night and try again next time. So once again, I'm AC2GS. This is the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. If anyone has any questions, comments, or topics of discussion, please hit that push to talk.
Echo 2, Yankee Golf, how do you copy?
I copy you fine there. How are you tonight, Sam?
Good evening, N2GOT here.
Hello, Howard. How are you this fine night?
Hey, good evening. Got a very strange problem on my tri-band 2-meter 440-220 antenna tonight, and I'm not getting a VSW. I'm not having any SWR issue, but this particular repeater, along with another one that's on UHF, but this one, there's a lot of QSB. I should take a video of it, of the repeater coming in right now. Although I thought there might be an issue with the output, I don't think there is. It's on my receive. It sounds like there's descents or something on my side, and I'm hearing your signal very solid on the input. And I could hear, and I'm looking at the my reflection, which is flat. I thought maybe I was having an issue with the antenna, which I'm not. Very strange issue.
Well, I think it's at your end because your signal sounds fine here. Is there any local transmission that could be desensing it? It, you know, obviously it doesn't have to be spot on. It could be off to the side, left or right. But have you kind of slid around and to see if there's any unusually strong signal in that you're receiving?
You know, the funny thing is I'm not. And I know a few weeks ago I was experiencing a lot of very strong stuff on the lower, actually upper HF portion of 10 meters. But it's really weird. It's like a lot of QSB on the fading on the signal. It wasn't happening last night. I had gotten home a little bit on the late side last night. I wanted to check in. Listen to the tail end of our net. I think there were some issues they were saying about Echolink. That your station was not transmitting a PL tone or something. I'm not too sure if that was, if you got the Echolink up and running, I guess that might have been resolved. But I did hear Sam in there too, and I guess he faded out, and maybe he had to step away from the radio. But yeah, I didn't want you to have to end this net unnecessarily so early, so I just wanted to jump in and say hello, and I'm going to give a listen for a while and see what's going on, but the repeater, there's no issue with the output of the repeater because I'm listening on my old, oldie but goodie Radio Shack 2005 receiver I've got on, and it's coming in solid. And so this rig, or the receiver I should say, with a one of those whip antennas on it, is picking up the repeater a little better than my topside antenna, which I think is pretty weird. So it's definitely something wonky going on up about at least another, 60, 50 feet above where I'm sitting right now.
Yeah, I tend to think desensing it is a reasonable answer to the question. I get that locally, but then I'm kind of trying to do too many things at one time. You know, I'm recording Limark's computer net, and of course, if I get on the radio here, the FTM 400, whose antenna is about 20 feet away, it desenses the 7100, and I can't record while I'm transmitting. So I experience desens all the time, but I kind of know what's going on there. But apparently sometime in the last few days, I was bumping things on my FTM 400 control head, and I somehow shifted it from memory to VFO mode, which keeps the same frequencies, fortunately, but it doesn't include the PL tone. So, by bumping the V-M, I basically turned the PL tone off. So I pressed it again, and it works fine now.
Yeah, very good. Very good. I think that crunchiness I just heard, duplexing that, is probably on my side with this mic. You got to replace the mic and or the cord on these, what is it, the MH48 sometimes. They get issues. And you're hearing a Yaesu. This is an old Yaesu, FTM350. Analog only. It's got a pretty good receiver on it. I have a very similar issue with Jeff Iowen's repeater on UHF. My guess is if I spin the antenna ever so slightly up there, just move it an inch or two, that issue might go away. What happens is sometimes my guess is that on VHF or UHF, I guess if you just move it even smaller on UHF, being it's on UHF, the wavelength is going to be longer on VHF. It might, that issue with the, it might be in what's called a null. That was my guess. I don't know if that issue is a, but if it wasn't, if I was in a null then on 7613, I should say, then I should also have QSB on my transmit signals. But the only thing I have is crunchiness. And I'm still curious as to where that noise is coming from on the machine, whether it's at the antenna or somewhere in one of those connecting cables.
Okay. I don't know if it's a null. I would assume if it was a null, it would kind of stay faded. It wouldn't kind of go in and out and in and out and in and out, unless the wind really shakes your antenna and rotates it.
Also be exhibiting that on the transmit. It's very, very calm now. As you know, what was it, a day or two back? It was very windy. This antenna is small enough to where it doesn't really get that badly affected by the wind. I've had at least two other antennas up there, which were, what, 17, 18 feet, that got snapped in the wind. I had other antennas up here which snapped in the wind in the past and have had issues because of the wind. And I'm not that high up above the ground over here, but I've had pretty bad luck. Well, all the years I've been on the air, it hasn't been that bad, but I've had a few antennas which succumbed to damage from higher winds out there. Anyway, I know a couple of other guys are out there. I don't know if Sam is back or if anyone else wants to check in. It's a very weird problem, and I don't get it all the time. Sometimes it's fine, and I should look around on VHF to see what's desensing that. But this 350 is kind of an okay receiver. It's not great, but it's not that susceptible to intermod, but it's not the best receiver either. But it's a weird issue, very, very strange.
AC2GS, agreed. And yeah, I agree with you. Antenna reciprocity would kind of suggest that if you were getting fade in because of the antenna, you should get transmission fade too, and you don't. You sound nice and strong into the repeater. So again, I think, I don't know if it's a proper RF device, but there might be just something that's spewing noise just around your receive frequency, and it might be an elevated source. That's probably why the lesser antenna that's at lower elevation is getting less of that. It's out of its near field or some such, and so it seems strange that the lesser antenna isn't afflicted with the desensing that the better antenna is.
Yeah, that's true. It's definitely true. I can hear it solid, and this is approximately 4 to 5 watts. Maybe not getting to the antenna, but leaving the transmitter. Getting to the antenna ain't too bad. What kind of coax am I using? I think it's RG213, if I remember correctly. But which is ain't too bad for UHF VHF with the loss. What am I running, about 60 feet of coax, approximately, 60, 70 feet. But anyway, it's pretty solid, and I'm hearing you very well on the input. So your signal is solid, and the other signal is just waving on the output of the machine back and forth. Now, I'm curious if I change radios for receive, that is, if it will do the same thing. My guess is it might.
Yeah, I mean, if it's the front end having some kind of a weird problem, you'll localize it to the receiver. If you plug in another receiver and you find that you're getting the same fade in, fade out, then you pretty much know that there's something going on with your antenna. Not necessarily a problem inherent in your antenna, but just that, you know, most receivers have about the same desense problems than any other. So, you know, unless you have some Jet Propulsion Lab model receiver, you should have pretty much the same sequence of events.
Sure, it's true, I was just curious about it. I thought that there's definitely a problem with the output of the machine until I put my other receiver on. I'm like, no, it's coming in, repeater's coming in fine, no problem. And I was like, okay. It's an issue I'm having on the receive side. And this thing's got dual receive. I don't think they're too independent. It's just you can listen to both VHF frequencies, 220 and 2 meters, as well as 440 and 2 meters. And it was doing the same on the other side. So I would really be scratching my head if it was not doing it on one side. Then I would say there's some type of technical issue with this rig, but okay, whatever. Didn't even mean to bring up the technical issue until I just started calling. I put on the radio, I'm like, the hell's wrong with the repeater? And I'm like, no, there's nothing wrong with the repeater right now. It's on my side.
Yeah, it's always something. William sent me an email about Echolink. The thing about Echolink, and you know, I mean, it certainly is possible that things can be about screwy on my end, although I kind of double and triple check it to make sure, because unfortunately Echolink in Windows can tend to rearrange what virtual audio connections it makes. But for the most part, it's behaving. But the problem is everyone's individual Echolink connection from one time to another can technically be great or miserable. And I mean, that's why they put Echo Test into it as a possible station. So I always suggest to people that if they have any problems hearing or being heard, the first thing that they should go is to the Echo Test and test it that way. If it fails the Echo Test, it kind of isolates it solely to your computer or your phone or your internet service provider and such. So, and you could do a lot more to fix your connection than you can my connection. The only thing you could do is email me and I'll take a look at it. But a lot of times people just can't connect for some reason while other people are connected already. So a lot of Echo Link is kind of, it's kind of screwy, and you just have to try it again. And worst comes to worst, reboot, because, you know, some people also have internet service for providers that seem to block ports that make Echo Link more difficult than it needs to be.
And CGOT here. Well, I'm glad that was resolved and it's working fine right now, and I'm not too sure as to how often. I'm sure you guys might get guys that want to check in here and speak online, or you're also transmitting this just for receive only online, like you do the LimeWalk net and as well as the 10-meter net. So, I'm glad at least the antenna is working properly, as it should. This is a Comet, what is it, a 333, I think? 333 antenna that works pretty okay, I would say, 2 meters, 440, and 220. Albeit, I run about 5 watts, I think, on 220 with the HT or the mobile. So that's it. Not much to add. I just wanted to at least have a little bit of activity out here for Wednesday night. Yeah, it's been, what, you're saying over a month since you've had the net out here. So maybe we could try to get some more check-ins in here for people to put some technical questions.
AC2GS, yeah, that would be nice. But, you know, it's unfortunately sort of been like this for months now. We have one or two people that come from the club. Sometimes we have one or two people who just hear us. They're just playing with their relatively new radios, and they hear us and they drop in and have a conversation, which is nice. As far as implementing EchoLink, you can't really implement EchoLink for HF because it's sort of designed to operate with a squelch. So if you don't have a squelch, it locks up the ability to transmit. So the only time I use the EchoLink is for our repeater as it is, not for any of the other. For LimeWalk, I'm able to use AllStar. I have access to their node, so I just go through their computer. Some people kind of don't like the digitized voice of AllStar, but you know it has a nice feature that it offers me duplex. So when people inevitably step on my words and try to talk while I'm talking, I can hear that and react as I need to.
Yeah, very good. Yeah, I know AllStar. I've heard of AllStar, and it sounds okay in digital. Doesn't sound that bad to me, and I'm not a fan of digital at all. I think it's like if you use the wider feature, and maybe some of the new protocols, the wider feature on Yaesu System Fusion, like we have here on our club's repeater, and I've heard other protocols that are in digital that don't sound that bad, but some of them, the way I guess their audio is set up, and maybe their firmware, some of it sounds very poor and very pitched and very robotic. But anyway, yes, I know you're not transmitting the 10-meter net on EchoLink, I think that's how I worded it before, but I'm saying you do transmit it from online, I guess, through the club server or the KCRC that net server that it's on. That's what I meant to say before. Because sometimes if I just want to listen to the net and I'm not in front of a radio, I'll tune in online.
Yeah, that's IceCast. I use IceCast. The cost is wonderful, which is to say free. The latency is terrible. It could be as long as 20, 25 seconds on a really bad day. But, I mean, you don't really need zero latency to just listen to a repeater because you're not talking back and forth to it because it's just a one-way connection. I also offer it for LimeWalk as well. Unfortunately, LimeWalk used to depend upon some semi-commercial website that offered a whole bunch of different radio streams, and that guy, his LimeWalk stream is misfunctioning most of the time. So every so often I'll be on the LimeWalk technical net and someone will come into the chat room and they'll say, your audio stream is out. And I ask them, well, where are you looking? And they're looking at the commercial website, and I say, you know, I begin the LimeWalk technet with the directions of how to access my audio stream, and you know I make sure that my audio streams are working. So yeah, I'm running two IceCast audio streams, one for Kings County Radio Club and the other for LimeWalk.
And TGOT. All right, just wanted to leave a space in there. Yes, it works nice. Yeah, so you're saying 20 some odd seconds, And you're right, that is quite a bit of a latency, especially if you want to duplex a little bit with it. You can't really with that amount of difference in time. So I've listened there a number of times, and a few days ago on Sunday, I left it on trying to check in, and I'm like, hey, where is it? I was just noticing, wow, what a big difference in the time frame of me checking in and you answering me. So, but all right, look, the cost is definitely attractive, and it works fine and dandy for you.
Yeah, that's my sentiments. Again, if it was there was a different purpose under it, I would reconsider. But again, the latency ultimately doesn't affect things that much. If anything, it's halfway decent, because sometimes if someone's wondering what they sound like, I can tell them to quickly go over to their computer and get on to the website, and they can actually hear themselves, you know, because of the latency delay. So it's good, especially it's free. I'm always looking for things that are very useful that tend to be free. You know, I don't really like to license things and, you know, pay and pay and pay and pay. So, you know, IceCast is wonderful that way. It's $0.
Well, my problem is all this world we're into with subscriptions now. If you look at what would it cost you every year for all these subscriptions for applications, it is very costly, and I avoid that because you're just looking at what you're paying every year for all these subscriptions, whether you know, you want to subscribe to something on Netflix or, as I said, to apps and things like that. It can be very, very costly, and that's what they're moving towards. I don't even have a problem with buying a program, whether it's Windows-based or iOS-based. Mac or whatever type of machine you're running, but the cost of all these things that they're moving towards with the subscription-based, I don't like. You know, just give me what I'm looking for, I'll pay for it, and that's it. They want more of a return on their investment with these people, I guess, that are maintaining the programs with updates and things like that. I mean, I know that people, we talk about Flex quite often, that we're complaining about having to, when a new firmware or whatever comes out, they're like, you want me to pay another $99 or $200 for that?
Yeah, unfortunately, that kind of bit us on the ass, because we gave Lex so much service on it that they decided to kind of slow down the progression of the firmware. So, you know, who won? Yeah, we didn't have to pay $99 or $200. You know, it's only up to 3.0. And most of the people didn't buy into the radio back at the 1.0. So, you know, most people bought it at 2.0 and paid for the 3.0 update and made Flex Radio's life miserable. So, you know, who knows when 4.0 will show up, just because they were all traumatized.
Hey, you know, it's funny. I remember playing with the Maestro. I can't believe it's going on next show.
Echo 2, Yankee Golf has a couple of questions.
I saw that. I figured they would be advancing both hardware and software a bit more by 2025, 2026. So, whatever. you can see I'm using the old, outdated, one of their legacy radios. And, I might even still consider their 8000 series, but if I didn't have such an issue here with not having the best HF antennas and all this noise and interference where I'm at, you know, I could use an old, outdated transceiver, you know, 40, 50-year-old receiver or transceiver, and so much noise at this QTH, you know, having the ultimate transceiver with a better receiver would make a difference for me.
Yeah, I can see that. Well, you know, I mean, having a 3,000 or a 5,000, at least the front end, the software is being updated, because you have an obsessive compulsive guy out there who's not being paid for his labor, who just keeps upgrading it, as opposed to Flex Radio, who would have to pay significant funds for guys who are trained in programming field programmable gate array chips, as opposed to most of the other SDRs are a little bit more generic. So, you know, we'll see what happens. Hopefully they'll get back on their horse and start to update the software and not destroy my radio for the seventh time, because I've had a lot of bad experiences where firmware just kind of locks everything up and I have to go doing an operation on my radio. By the way, Sam kind of stepped over you that he had some questions. So thanks, Howard, as always, for your help here, and especially thank you for next Sunday giving me the morning off.
And let me make sure I have it. I heard somebody in there, but I wasn't paying attention because I figured it was the radio went to another frequency. But now I'm hearing myself on that other receiver. And hello, Sam. Bob, whoever else I think is out there. I'm wondering if this issue with this noise could be a thermal issue. The repeater has been key for a while. Kind of weird. So I don't think it's from this microphone. So, all right, let me give it over to Sam, and I'll throw that away. Step away. I'll listen, I guess, either the scanner or the HD, NCGOT.
Sam, are you out there? This is AC2GS. Are you out there, AE2YG?
Sam, where are you, Sam?
I guess Sam is having a little problem with his radio tonight.
I don't know. I figured maybe he stepped away again. Whatever. So I guess we'll stand by here. He'll come back.
Okay, I hope so. He mentioned that he had a couple of questions, so we'll give him a little bit more time to get back on the repeater.
Good evening, guys. This is KD2VEA.
Hello there, Max. How are you tonight?
Well, while listening to the repeater, it's a little crackling. So I wonder if that's happening for everybody, and that's what's going on with that.
Well, some people are reporting crackling. I hear crackling with Howard. I don't hear crackling with you.
I'm hearing crackling between you and Howard, but I wonder if I speak longer, you'll hear crackling with me as well. But Joe and I did visit the repeater right about 2 weeks back. I'll tell you guys a little bit of that. I'm going to, at some point, send out the images over the weekend to everyone, and the executive committee anyway, so you guys can see what it all looks like. It's in pretty decent shape, at least from the looks of it. Although we thought the crackling is not going to be happening anymore, because that was one really bad nest, and we decided to go out there. But overall, you know, things look normal. There's no obvious damage. We kind of cleaned up a little bit, moved stuff around, restarted things. I adjusted the antenna, which was the metal piece was a little bit bent, so I straightened it out a little bit. Yeah, and I had to patch up cover a cable with some tape, but that was the control radio, not the regular radio. But yeah, that was it.
Okay. Yeah, as you were talking, I noticed more crackling. That could be wind. You know, there's a lot of different things that produce transients on antennas and such. Limewark had a terrible time. They decided ultimately that the wind was producing micro fractures in the antenna. They just kind of swapped it out for a quad folded dipole, and I think that the memory serves that made it all go away, but who knows. So, you know, any kind of intermittent problem is very difficult to figure out.
I bet. And that's why we were kind of thinking of, like, what kind of improvements can be done to the repeater. Obviously, a new antenna, we talked about that a little bit. We can continue that conversation later on. But also, kind of, what some of the other things we can do to expand the range. And that's what I just discussed. And also, that question I sent you about what do you think about mesh networks potentially. actually give internet access right at the spot.
Yeah, I sent your response. I mean, ultimately, I haven't played with it that much. I've seen a lot of YouTubes on it. Sounds interesting. Sounds like it could be reasonably inexpensive. So, you know, if we could kind of demonstrate that we're out there to kind of help the rest of the guys, because ultimately, whether these meshes are functional and useful depends upon, you know, the density of the mesh transceivers that are out there locally. So I have nothing particularly against dipping our toe into a mesh network.
That's my thoughts as well. And plus, there's a way to just, like, for us to buy equipment and just try it on our own and join and like, kind of like basically, well, we'll connect, we'll try it on our own and see what happens. The one question I wanted to ask you, and actually Howard as well, because you guys have history on the repeater placement and kind of like our spot there. If we put in a mesh network link and just and put out just an access point there, do you feel like it's going to cause anybody to lose their mind? That's step one. Step two, what if we put a kind of repeater node there, because one of the things the mesh likes to do is put in a thing that allows other people nearby to connect as well. Do you feel like that's going to cause us any trouble as well?
Ultimately, it depends upon how crazy we go. For the most part, most of these mesh networks that I've at least seen tend to be kind of small, diminutive. Even the antennas are small. So, you know, as long as we kind of keep that in mind, I think it's very easy to kind of build and put up a stealth mesh repeater. You know, again, as long as we don't go crazy and decide that we want to have commercial broadcast standards going on.
Yeah, and yeah, as I was looking at it, it's actually pretty small. We could mount the dish the right below the antenna. So we already have like our vertical antennas, which is our regular 2 meter antenna. Below it, we have a 70 centimeter Yagi pointed at the direction of South Brooklyn, and so we can actually attach that other antenna right just below it or nearby it, right on that mast, and it's not going to look any more crowded. And just run a wire along with the other wires into the room where the repeater is, and then that will allow us to hook up a modem down there, and then also then hook up a wireless access point, or just even can plug it in as a direct network connection straight in, and that will allow us to have an internet connection straight at the node. And I'm just kind of thinking about it. I might explore that and see if we can do that.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting thing. I don't think that it kind of gives you the ultimate full broadband internet service. It's most likely everything I've seen, the through rate is rather constricted and limited. But I mean, you know, like I said, mesh networks are very dependent upon density. So, you know, if we add our hardware to the other people working on it in the metropolitan area, you know, we're part of the solution, not part of the problem.
But I'm kind of as I thought, like, let's say we have internet over there and we can put up in addition to the repeater, put a computer running some software. What does that unlock for us in your mind?
I don't really know. It sort of depends what you really want out of it. It's probably more a problem than a solution, because now you're maintaining something. I mean, I guess if it's a Linux box, you don't need to regularly reboot it. But, I mean, Windows, I wouldn't work on a Windows system that hadn't been rebooted in the past 4 days. So, you know, you're always kind of rebooting it. It can lock up, and it's going to require a lot more maintenance. So I'm not quite sure what kind of operating system you would want and what you might really get. I mean, as far as I'm aware, you know, just putting in the mesh links and such should be sufficient. I mean, they have their own little small computer architecture built into them.
I say, hey, Roy, now what's the next thing you want to do? For example, right now we have Echo Link, right, running right out of your house. We have the stream running out of your house. Could that be running right off the repeater?
Yeah, it could. If you, it depends upon the bandwidth of your internet provider, and also again, you know, how much maintenance you want to deal with. My maintenance is, you know, when I'm passing by the shack, I kind of check to see that everything's working the way it should, and that's not a pain in the backside. You got to get up and then drive down and go up and climb ladders and such. That could be rather tedious. So yeah, I mean, you could certainly reproduce anything that I'm doing here at the repeater site. You just have problems with maintaining it there.
Yeah, I consider that as well, because even right now the WiresX computer that's running in my dad's house, Joe's constantly messaging me like every other day. He's like, hey, their laptop's down, and every time it's something else. Sometimes it's reboots, because it has daily reboots. And the daily reboots sometimes get stuck. It just decided not to restart. So the only way to then poke it is to, you know, turn off the power, turn it back on. And that means, like, well, what, are we going to go to the repeater site every time? And then next thing you have is, like, all right, I know we can do stuff remotely, and how do you remotely turn off the power, turn on the power to a computer? Like, then we're, like, stuck in the redundancy mode as well. But instead of having a wire that's actually sitting somewhere else, it could be just there right away and transmitting. So it's kind of an interesting idea. I wish our club had like a real shack that this was located in, that we could meet and do this, rather than having a location that we're just kind of squatting in. But it would have been, imagine that we had access to something like your shack, but it was a club shack that we had access to, that this stuff could run and somebody could always maintain it. Nonetheless, wishing is one thing, reality is another. But also, I'm curious if
SDGOT
has any comments on this one.
Yeah, having our own shack is a big nut. If we were a rural type of club, where land is cheap and, you know, people are using things for multiple purposes, that's one thing. In a metropolitan area, you saw how difficult it is to just get a meeting place for a couple of hours once a month. So you can imagine what the nut would be for maintaining some kind of a shack in Brooklyn. You would want it to be relatively near us. You know, you're not going to kind of place it upstate, because then it would be impossible to get to.
KGOT, let me see if I have it. Yeah, I think the question was asked, what my input was on it. I guess we'd have to look into it more and see what the pros and cons are, but it definitely sounds like there's more pros to it. And you were saying you would like to put up a mesh network, I think, at the repeater site, which is actually a pretty good radio spot. There's probably some other upgrades that we need to do there. I guess the next one or two times you guys visit. And I'm also curious about this crackling issue. And this, I think, is coming from my side. So it's adding to whatever crackling might be on the repeater. So I think I'm having a mic issue here. As long as I try to keep from moving this too much. So, let me give it back over to you. This is NTGOT.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Howard. I think a mesh network is a kind of separate type of a situation versus upgrade, update, and check on what's going on with the repeater as well. But like I said, I mean, as long as we don't go crazy, they tend to be relatively small, relatively inexpensive, and they don't require a lot of maintenance from what I've heard. So, you know, it wouldn't be an outlandish thing to consider, and shouldn't, you know, I mean, you don't have to start with the whole thing the first day. You could set up something simple and upgrade it as time goes on as well.
Yep, appreciate it. So let's talk about the rest of it. So I'll tell you some of the things that, like, Joe and I kind of bounced around while we're trying to maintain it. By the way, it was a lot of fun. I'll send some pictures. I don't have a fear of heights, so it's kind of fun to be up there. The views is spectacular, I gotta say. We are there on a crisp, it wasn't cold, but it was a nice, like, cool day, perfect visibility, it was sunny, I gotta say, it was fun. And then we got to go and fix the repeater up. There was some construction on the roof as well, and there were guys coming with it, doing the elevator stuff, and they were curious to what we were doing. hopefully as they're fixing the elevators on some of our equipment. That's one of the things we want to go back and check in a couple of weeks just to make sure they didn't damage anything. Right, I'll send you some pictures of some interesting things because there are these cavities that are actually installed with it. So it would be interesting to talk about what they're doing. Are they doing the adequate job? Are they actually doing more damage in terms of reducing our input and output? Because like one of the things we talked about, right, we can change the antenna. That's going to be a challenge because in order to even fix the antenna, I had to climb a ladder in a very, very narrow space. It would be hard to get more than two people in there. You probably need three, and just to like bring down this thing and replace the antenna, put a new antenna in. But like that's one of the things, a better antenna. Our antenna is a top a little bit bent, but it's not so bad. So that's one thing. Second thing we talked about is bringing back an amplifier, and a amplifier will help us get out further, but we need a preamp, I think, or something like that in order to basically be able to hear better. So increase the ability to hear and the ability to pump out more power. That was the second thing that we were thinking about. Third thing was bringing in internet so that we have connectivity right from over there. And a fourth thing was interesting because we do have a 70/2 meter repeater, and what can we do with the other side? Well, we can actually also have a 70 centimeter repeater portion. We can replace the control radio with that and actually use it as a repeater, and some people have said that their connectivity is actually better on 70 because it's just a lower noise floor, so that was kind of an interesting point. I was actually thinking about using that 70 centimeter piece to be able to maybe connect with another repeater. So I know that Resistor Club, for example, they are testing and they're planning to put up a repeater in their area, so maybe there will be some connectivity that would be fun to do if that actually pans out. But anyway, we do have like this second side to our repeater that's not really being used. It's just, you know, we can do something with that as well. Either just have two modes on our repeater or use a second mode for connectivity with another repeater. So, yeah, so just that's some of the things we were bending around. Just wondering what you guys thought on that, and just any other questions on the repeater making.
Well, as far as linking, you know, Linemark does that, but they have, I've lost count, they have something like 20 different repeaters, and some of them they link using different technologies. They used to use 900 megahertz, then they moved it to an all-star link, so they moved away from RF linking. It's okay if the club itself has other repeaters, but why would you want to link with another local Brooklyn-based organization? It's kind of, they have theirs, we have ours. If you make it redundant, I mean, you'll fill the airwaves with the same stuff twice. So if you want to look busy, I guess, but ultimately you're not bringing anything more to the table, in my humble opinion.
So this is KD2V. That's a fair critique. In the end, that would just basically be more of the same. But it is kind of like that. Like right now, the repeater is not being used a lot. So I was wondering if more, if there is more traffic, if there's more connectivity, if more people would be willing to get on. So that's just an idea. Like the linking repeaters is something that I just got excited about when I was in California and I was on a Papa network, but that is a long distance, right? They have repeaters all along the coast, and you can actually like basically hear all the way almost up to San Francisco. Well, from San Diego, that's pretty cool linking right there. I guess like linking within Brooklyn is not exactly true. That's not really extending our range of operations there. But I was like, well, but then I kind of like, what else can we do with that 70 centimeter side that we're not really using right now? Because we have a control radio, right? So which is on 70, and that's and with the Yagi. So I wonder, like, why can't we use a 70 as a repeater, two as a repeater, and then we use that 70 for control as well, or just, you know, still use that second radio for control because we do have a Yagi and it's a special tones and stuff. So yeah, I was curious. With all that, like any. What do you guys think? Like, which way should we go? Amplifying, making us hear better and transmit better, new antenna, internet connectivity, more functionality. Like, what would you like to see from the computer?
Well, hey, we should kind of check everything. I think it was about 7-8 years ago, I brought Andy, WA2CDL, up there, and he took a look at the duplexer, and he checked that it's tuned reasonably well. Unfortunately, Andy's passed away since then, and there are friends of the club that if you can kind of talk nice and cajole them, they might come up there and check how things are working. I would say, assuming that the duplexer and everything else is up to specs, we'd get more bang for the buck with a new antenna. I've learned the hard way that, you know, amplifiers can only do so much stuff. UHF and VHF are point-to-point, and so, you know, if your point is better, then it works much better than if you just try and throw a lot of watts. And we talked in the past that if we get something big and heavy and expensive, you know, it's very possible we'll screw up our free power and other such things. So, you know, whereas mesh is a very small footprint, you know, putting up linear amplifiers and bigger power supplies and all kinds of things, I always kind of am tempted that, you know, we might end up making the wrong person aware that they're there. We're there. So, you know, although I realize that antennas are the most difficult, I think we'd all get more bang for the buck with an antenna than with just kind of forcing a high-power linear amplifier, although you really didn't say what kind of power supply. You know, what kind of a linear amplifier? It's also probably a good idea to have a low-power amplifier so that we can kind of save our actual radio from kind of burning itself out along the way. But I certainly wouldn't kind of throw a lot of watts at people. I don't think you don't quite get the bang for the buck, and I think you're asking for problems with maintenance and power supply, and you know leaving it there unattended for a long time until people who own the building figure out that there's something strange going on.
I tend to agree. I think it's just like the preamp and the amplifier feels like it's the easiest thing to do, simply, especially if they're like overpowered, just regular 120 volts. It's easier to do because then you don't have to go and change up the antenna. But you're probably right. Getting a better antenna with better gain, that's not a little bit bent, will probably give us the best bang for the buck. Even though it's going to be a challenge installing it, and I'm going to probably need quite a bit of help doing that because I've never installed an antenna. Roy, I wouldn't mind hearing what NTGOT has to say about it just as well. Just curious. I'm pre-vetting some of these ideas before these conversations come up in the meeting, so I just wanted to get your take.
My two cents would be, let me make sure I have it, NTGOT here. We've been through this before with an amateur radio amplifier up there. I forget exactly what happened to it. I got to ask Mitch or Joe about it. We also had an issue with the preamp that was up there. It creates more things in the system, which could be a little bit more problematic. I think power-wise, with what's being drawn on, the best, I think, way we would do it, I mean, and I suggested this years ago when we first went to this other fusion machine that's up there now, is keep it at about 10 to 15 watts on the output and back it down and, yeah, use like an amplifier. You get maybe 100, 150 out. I wouldn't mess with the receive. Stu was also up there years ago, WA2JNF helped us out. He said we pretty much maxed it out. You can get a few more dBs out of, I think, a higher gain antenna, but you need to completely change out the hardware because we've got, I think it's a Hustler G6 up there for VHF, which was and is, I guess, a four-man's repeater antenna for a long time. And we kind of settled and looked at kind of similar what Limark is using, like that dipole type of antenna. Which would definitely improve both your transmit and your receive, provided, I would say you bring it up another few meters, at least another, 10, 15 feet. But that would require, as I said, more different, heavier, beefier mounts, probably a bigger mast or more durable mast. So that would be a big undertaking, I think. say leave well enough alone, but my recommendation years ago is to use a repeater, like a Henry amplifier or a Motorola one. You got to get something that's commercial rated. Run at least 10 to 15 watts into it. You want, as I said, at least 80, 100 watts out, something that's going to be 100% duty cycle. Well, all those amplifiers are 100% duty cycle anyway. They have their own fan array and everything in them. But again, also, it begs the question, you know, you're going to be drawing a bit more current, more power supplies. It can introduce some more issues. So I think one thing at a time, the biggest difference, in my opinion, would be in a higher performing antenna. But that would be a bit of an undertaking because of the work that you need to do up there to change that antenna out. Right?
Yeah, so we pretty much agree. I do not agree with the idea of throwing, you know, something like a 200-watt linear amplifier up there, even if you're going to set it for a lower value. It's going to be less efficient. It's going to take more power from the power supply. It's going to have a bigger footprint and all kinds of other things and a bigger expense. So, yeah, I would agree. We don't need anything really, you know, you're not really going to gain much if you go above an 80 to 100-watt output on a linear amplifier, and you could lower the driver power and extend the lifespan of our radio. So, again, although it's the biggest pain in the backside, it's probably the best bang for the buck solution for us at this time.
All right, this is KDQB8. So what I'm hearing is, well enough alone, pretty much. Like, if things are working, make sure it's working. Next time Joe and I go there, we need to make sure the fan's working correctly, clean it up a little bit more, and just leave it alone. Maybe put internet, because, like, that's kind of the idea. But I think none of the ideas are really going to give us anything special, like, maybe, you know, anything useful. What about the UHF portion of the repeater? What do you think about that?
You know, if we were living in a different time and repeater use was increasing, I'd consider it. But at this point, you know, I listen to UHF, I listen to VHF. It's kind of sad what's become of repeaters. Even places like Limewark, which was one of the most active repeaters in the metropolitan area, the poor president of Limewark had to talk people into starting morning drive time and afternoon drive time nets and all kinds of pseudo nets to get the activity that he wanted. I don't know if it's cost effective to add yet another repeater. You know, you take a look at the utilization that we have on our repeater here, and it's not because it's on VHF. It's because it's a repeater. And in the same way that, unfortunately, you go to the HF bands, and it's probably not as active as it was 10, 20 years ago. It's just the nature of the hobby, unfortunately. So I don't see any great benefit. We'll have twice as much unused repeater time as we have now, which, you know, what does that get you?
It's just using this, just because it has the 70 centimeter part as well. We're just not using it at all, just dormant. Blair said that, mentioned that there's a lower noise floor on 70 centimeters. Is that true?
Not significantly. I've never known any guy who kind of says, yeah, I never deal with VHF because it's noisy. It's approximately the same. Again, I don't know of anyone who kind of jumped from one band to another band because of some kind of intrinsic technological reason. You know, people just, it's more important with repeaters, you know, the population, the community that surrounds them. So, you know, if you got a bunch of nice guys that you like on VHF, you operate on VHF. If somehow you decide that 220 is a great frequency and your friends are there, then you go to 220. Most people don't. I don't think we would get one additional user on our repeater if we magically moved it to UHF.
I appreciate it. So it's almost like, don't mess with it, leave it alone, make sure it works, maintain it. The other thing was, if we just find some batteries there, they're probably dead. Next time we're going to haul them out of there. The other thing we could put up there, some newer batteries and some things that could potentially keep them up, keep the repeater running for about a day without power. So for a little bit of a outage backup, that some of those gentlemen and other thoughts. Yeah, anything else? Any questions? Any comments? Anything else you want to mention about the repeater? Just curious.
AC2GS, not much. I mean, we went through this again. This is all deja vu. We had a discussion more than once about whether we wanted to have lead acid or lithium iron phosphate. I don't know. It sort of depends upon how much the repeater is used. It would have to be used either very, very slightly for that day, or you'd have to get significant capacity batteries. You know, find some kind of happy medium somewhere, and it's reasonable to have the ability to, you know, at the very least, if there's some hiccup in the power supply, that should cover it, as opposed to maybe a full active day's use. You know, there's a big difference with the repeater, how much it's used on Friday versus how much it's used on Tuesday.
Okay. Yeah, this has been, I'm sure as much of this is a repeat. It's the first time I've been there. Kind of got to see what it looks like, and thinking through now that we have gone back there for the first time in like 4 years or something like that, what are some of the things we can do? But yeah, first step, clean it up, maybe update the voice, the recording there, and then maybe get to this crackling thing. I still don't know what's going on. And then, yeah, also we want to do after that how much we want to disturb the people. Awesome. I wonder if anybody else is listening to ask questions. This is CG2VH.
TGOT here. Yeah, I'm not too sure where the crackling is coming from. It could be something that's thermal, because we were out here for a while, crackling started, I guess, once the repeater was keyed for a while. But yeah, it's having batteries up there is definitely a good idea. I think we did settle on the lithium phosphate ones. You need to bring the machine down to at least 5 or 10 watts, probably 5 watts. If you're lucky with heavy use, you'll get maybe one day out of it. Hopefully, you wouldn't be out of power for more than 20, 24 hours. So anyway, I'm going to step away. Ready to hit the hay here shortly, but I'll keep the radio on, be listening. But my vote would be to, I think the biggest performance difference you would have both on receive and transmit would be with that an antenna replacement. But again, the height would also have to be increased a bit up there, which I'm not sure how much higher you could make whatever other antenna that would be up there, but one of those arrays would definitely improve the performance of the antenna. I think we looked into it, and this is just a few pounds that's up there now. This other antenna, I think, if I remember correctly, is approximately 17 pounds, quite a bit more weight on that mast. So I'll be listening out. NTGOT, I guess back to net control.
Yeah, we were talking about a quad-folded dipole. It's basically the same antenna that Limark decided to replace their W2VL VHF repeater. We were looking at prices, all kinds of things. We were talking a lot about the repeater until, you know, COVID just kind of smashed everything to pieces.
Yeah, was it Antenna Solutions, whatever site we went to with Mitch, at least 5-6 years ago, we were looking at that. They had a pretty aggressive price on that antenna system. And it's, as I said, at least probably about 4 times the amount of weight that's up there now.
Yeah, but it's a very sturdy design, and it's legitimately something that's designed for a repeater rather than not really a repeater, but, any port in a storm type of replacement for a repeater type of antenna that we have up here now.
Yeah, that's right. By the way, the other theory we had, I think we brought up off the air, one of my friends who's a repeater owner, Ken, I'll keep calling him MAK, K2ZZ, had cautioned us, we had
to follow his advice against using 9913. Was it 9913? I'm trying to remember which feed line we decided to put up there. You probably remember, because there was an issue with the repeater owners were complaining about with one of the feed lines. It's a technical issue which created a crackling noise on the repeater. It could be from maybe the feed line, but we don't know. I guess we might need a more technical expertise up there to try to find out what that issue is.
Yeah, I remember the conversation. It really didn't lead to anything. I don't remember what we used. I tend to always kind of, I like LMR 400, but I don't really remember what was used the last time anyone swapped them out.
The Charlie 2 Alpha Echo.
Yeah, Joe, it might have been the LMR 400, I'm not too sure. But you can look it up, it was on the repeater forms, Joe. I'll be on the site listening in TGO2.
Unfortunately, our last trip to, well, let me make sure I've got this. The last trip to the repeater site, we weren't really able to determine what the brand was, if it was the 9913 or the LMR 400. I do remember Mitch calling it LMR 400, so that's why I always assumed that it was. But it could have been 9913. I do have a ton of LMR 400 here at the house that I'm willing to give to the club for the antenna. We do have hardline. I do remember that the hardline that we do have, the problem that we ran into was we didn't have tool to put the connectors on it. So we did have the connectors, we just didn't have the tool. And the tool winded up being pretty expensive, like around $100 or so. I personally wasn't able to do it without it. The wire is just, the center wire is just too thick to do with the conventional soldering iron. Other than that, the coax cable was painted on a bit. From last night's net, what I gathered, because the beginning of the net, everybody sounded fine. Everybody was coming in good. I was coming in with low power, 5 watts. I believe William was using a Bofang HT. He was coming in fine. I believe after some use of time, the repeater may be heating up. What I did notice was that the fan that we did have there was gone. So it wasn't nowhere to be found. There was a construction crew that was up there fixing the elevator, and there was another construction crew there that was fixing the building at the time. They could have gotten it confused with their tools and, you know, taken it away or unplugged it when they painted or whatever and just never put it back. Either way, we're probably going to need a fan, a 110-volt fan that's going to constantly be blowing on it. That's the only difference that I've seen. Otherwise, the duplexer is there, the cavity is there, the repeater is, of course, obviously intact with the controller. So, when Max and I was up there, everything except with the antenna being tilted a bit to the side, I would say probably maybe 15 or 20 degrees. But he straightened that out, and it really seemed to improve everything over here. Like I said, I think this may be a heating issue. I think it may be a coax issue, that the coax is just that old, and it's probably getting dry rotted. It seemed in decent condition, but ultimately, guys, we're going to need a new antenna, new coax, and then in the future, if the club does eventually get funds for it, I'd like to see a repeater back on that. An amplifier back on that repeater. That's just my thoughts. Alpha Charlie 2 Alpha Echo. Sorry for taking up so much time.
Yeah. No problem, Joe. That's what we came here to talk about tonight, apparently. You know, an important thing, you know, this is the repeater. You know, without our repeater, you know, we're a little bit less of an amateur radio club, so I understand.
I got to say, I definitely agree with you. I definitely think having the repeater up and running and functioning well is definitely a good idea. And we're in a position now where we can do a little something more than we were able to do in the years previous. I think Howard has a valid point. I was thinking of getting W2JNF up there with us and see if Stu could help us out a little bit. And I know he did it pro bono last time. I don't expect him to do it again pro bono. So, you know, if he's got a fee, you know, I'm sure we could, take care of that. Alpha Charlie 2 Alpha Echo.
Yeah, yeah. But the thing is, it's a matter of, do you want him to kind of check it out before we decide to do anything, or once we implement the things that we wanted to, so he could just kind of check to make sure that everything is working the way it was supposed to?
You know what, that's actually a very good point. We might want to consider that, too. You know, Mitch had brought up an antenna. I can't remember. It was a vertical dipole antenna. I can't remember the brand of it. But that seemed to be the most logical antenna for our solution, And if we ever did in the future want to add more of those dipoles for more strength in certain directions and more of a decibel gain, that was also a possibility. You might, one of you guys might remember that antenna. It's been a while, but... I think that's going to probably be the way for us to go, is for an antenna, coax. I mean, we got that LMR 600, that hard line in the shed. It's definitely more than enough to get into the shack. The thing is, too, the antenna, the antenna mast is a nice solid mast, but once you get up to that water tower area, to get to the antenna, you do have to climb a bit of a ladder. So, that ladder is only, one person. You get on that ladder at a time. So there are some challenges there. I definitely suggest the next time we go to the repeater site, just do a massive cleanup. And I think we should just wait to program everything until we get the antenna and everything situated. I mean, listen, this is something for the board to decide. You know, this is, that's just my opinion, I think, like Roy, you had some valid things, too. Like, maybe we should wait until after the antenna before getting us to up there. All right. I'm game for anything. AC2, AE.
AC2GS. Yeah, it's a quad-folded dipole. You could buy it with less than four folded dipole elements, but the standard high-end version that we were looking into was a quad-folded dipole. It's the exact same model antenna that Limark used for W2VL about 5 years ago, give or take.
That's fantastic to know. So we actually have somebody in the local area that's actually using the antenna, and that's the W2VL is an extremely popular machine. I mean, if we do take it to a vote, I guess I'm going to be in 100%. The hardline, man, we gotta roll that out and see exactly how much it is, how much feet we have of it. I guess a trip to the shed would probably be in order for that.
Be able to come in.
I don't know about the hard line. I mean, it certainly is an option, but, long-term maintenance is better, but short-term maintenance is much harder. It's bigger, it's heavier, it's less flexible. As you mentioned, it requires a special device to put the connectors on. WA2CDL, I mentioned, had a guy who had hard line, and he had a tough time getting the connectors on. So, it's going to, what kind of additional benefit do you really get from it as opposed to something like an LMR or a 400 or such?
Another point, too, is the hard line diameter of it is much thicker, much wider than the LMR 400. So we would be required to drill a larger hole in the building, which I doubt the building owners would frown upon. I doubt they would want us to do that. There's a lot to consider, Roy. You know, you bring a very, very good valid point. LMR 400, I have it. It's relatively new. All we have to do is just slide it through the existing hole. that might be more of a choice than switching over. I mean, listen, the hotline we could always visit in the future, just to get us up and running 100%. I'd like to find out for sure if that's a heating issue or not. I'd like to get another fan up there and, keep it cool and see if that's it. You got to remember, it is in an open box, but it is compact. It does have the controller right on top of it. So, I don't know. It could be the coax. It could be the heat. We just did come out of the summertime, so it does get pretty hot up in that elevator shaft. A lot of things to consider. Alpha Charlie 2 Alpha Echo, back on over to Net Control.
Yep, I mean, the bottom line is we have to do a thorough investigation of the site, clean it up as best we can, and listen to recordings of it, maybe, so you can kind of perceive if there's a pattern, if there's a temporal pattern to it. You know, right now, I don't know exactly how hot or cold it is. It's opened up there, and it's only about 57 degrees. So, one would think that thermal issues would be more demonstrable a couple of months ago, when things were as much as 90 degrees. But anything's possible. You never know.
I agree. Yeah, we definitely have to get a good thorough check out of it. The two construction crews were up there. So it is a little congested right now. So I suggest maybe we wait a couple of weeks. I know it'll be a little bit colder, but I don't mind the cold. So long as it's not snowing, I'm fine with going up. Or really raining, but if it's raining, we could still get up there. AC-280.
Okay, well, we got a bunch of things to reconnoiter and figure out, and hopefully, everyone kind of keep their ear to the radio and see if there is a consistent time-based increase in the background noise. It could be wind related, it could be heat related, it could be humidity related. Unfortunately, there's a lot of variables out there.
I also, the last 2 weeks, or the last week and a half, I should say, I've been trying to I've been taking the HT with me, not a bigger radio, but as far as Long Island, I'm hearing the repeater all the way as far out as exit 33. Lindenhurst on the Southern State. I'm not able to hit it with the 5 watts on the HT, but I got to tell you, I'm hearing it pretty solid. I wouldn't say quite a 10 on the S meter, but hearing it pretty good. All along the Southern State, it does kind of come in and out a little bit. There was that as well. I don't know if you guys noticed, but I've been playing the Casey White on the machine just to keep it active so I can hear it when I'm out there. Another thing, too, out in Staten Island, I'm hearing the repeater really good, too, but I get to a certain part, right after Toad Hill, and that's it. That hill just completely blocked every signal from there on in. So the whole, southern or the western side of the island is completely shut off from us. Where else? New Jersey. I was in New Jersey last week, and all the way from exit 8 on the turnpike, I was hearing the repeater, and it was with just an HT antenna on the side of the window of the car. So, the repeater is getting out, it's just, certain areas. So I'm just going to ask everybody to be observant of where you hear the repeater when you're out and about. If you've got your HT, if you can key it up, or if you can, just, we should should really start mapping out where we're hearing it from. Alpha Charlie 2, Alpha Echo.
Okay, very good. It seems like there's even more of that background noise now. So, I don't know. It could very well be a heat-related situation. But, you know, we'll see.
Glad you guys are on tonight, man. It's good to have this repeater active as well. AC2 and E. All right, I'll be right back. I got to go get a seltzer. I'll be right back.
Okay, very good. Once again, this is AC2GS with pretty much the tail end of the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. If anyone has any comments before, you know, I'm going to call it a night soon, but if anyone has anything to say, please hit that push to talk.
This is KD2VA. Just wanted to say...
KD2OBM, how are you, Roy? How are you doing? I heard Howard, I heard you. I think it was a Mac for also. I was just listening. I'm walking, exercising. And I turned off the radio and put myself on the echo link. The echo link sound clear, totally clear, Roy. And Joe were coming to static. I'm static over there. Comment. I don't know. I think no. It's impossible to beat up my table antenna over there if we put it. Just joking. And have a comment about, I don't know if we have the equipment or not. If somebody has a line of sight to the repeater to put data over there, I could give to Ubiquiti equipment that they do line of sight, like a virtual Ethernet cable. It has a range up to 10 miles, I think, with the line of sight. And I think that the speed that it handles, I don't remember if it's 100 megabits or 300. I don't remember exactly. It's a good thing for experimenting in the beginning until they find out how it works. I already know how it works. There are videos on YouTube that explain very easy, but might be difficult in the beginning for people that they don't know about it. But it's very important, the line of sight part. KD2OVM.
Hello there, Axel. AC2GS. Yeah, I'm aware of it, but the problem is that when we needed someone to act as the Wires X conduit, it took us years, and that location isn't anywhere near a point-to-point type of thing. We have very few members who are kind of that close to the repeater and have access to the elevation needed to reach it. So offhand, I would tend to be a little bit pessimistic that we can have a club member set up a point-to-point internet, long-distance connection that way.
Got you. Okay, so without that, there's nothing to talk about. Then they need actual internet service right on the area, right, on the spot. I don't know what they use. If they use a hotspot or they use internet from somebody, from a neighbor that lives around and they pay them. Or, just saying, if there's the signal from Optimum, somebody has Optimum online account, and they can set up a device like a router or something that has the option to set it up as a client and could get the signal from Optimum. I don't know what kind of computer they have set it up over there by the repeater. If it has a good antenna receiver over there, or it could be put an external antenna receiver, it could get the Optimum, then that's it. Back to you, Roy.
AC2GS. Yeah, we sort of kind of talked about that earlier tonight. And the problem is that the more things that you put up there, you're introducing different links in the chain, that more links that can break. So you have to maintain all of that stuff. I kind of thankfully listen a lot to what Limewark is doing. And they're doing all those sort of things, but their routers have gone out multiple times. Their computers have gone out multiple of times. If you have some kind of on-site people willing to take care of things, that's no problem. If you have to kind of get up any old time and run down there, the guys at Limewark are willing to actually do that. I don't think anyone kind of cherishes that kind of on-the-job, on-site type of repairs. So I think ultimately the benefits of having these things on the repeater is not as great considering the cost and trouble fixing type of situations that it kind of creates and generates, and you have to be on top of it or else it stops working.
Right, 100%. There are some type of devices that you can put, let's say, to reboot it out once a day. You know, nobody's using it at that hour, and that it reboots. So just in case something gets wrong there, the moment it reboots automatically, that's it. Or, I don't know, you could set it up through the program to do that, or could be done with something mechanical. That okay, mechanical brakes, but some of them are good quality. Joe there mentioned before something about temperature management also. Yeah, they gotta get something commercial, something man-made for servers or something like that, something that is like for long time and heavy duty. And the more people that they can add themselves to the repeater thing, the better. I'm once a week I'm available to do something if they are needed. The problem would be, like, I heard that there is access to certain parts on the outdoors, and what is going to happen in the winter? That's my question, when it's like very cold. But apart from that, if it's not super cold winter, the more people that they are trained to access the repeater, the better. Matt took the initiative to go with Joe to learn, and I'm also willing. The question is, when are they available, if they would be available and willing to teach more people to come and do it? I'm sure they will. Okay, 2OVM.
Yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of automated things, but unfortunately, I've experienced the joy of Windows, which is, I don't care how many automatic things you got going, Windows will find a way to lock itself up under certain circumstances. So, I mean, yeah, there are tricks, there are toys that we can buy to kind of lessen it slightly, but you could never diminish it anywhere near completely. There's always going to be people who have to go up there. Again, I kind of use as my slide rule Limewire, because they put a lot of effort, they put a lot of time, they put a lot of money in maintaining all these repeaters. And yet, you know, I've talked to guys who kind of are summoned to go up there in the middle of the night or on the weekends and such, and you know, God bless all of them. You know, there's only so many people who will do that so many times until they finally say, you know, I don't want to do this anymore. So I think ultimately we have to try as best we can to limit the points of failure. If there are, you know, are 12 things that can go wrong, that's not as good as if there's only 4 things that could go wrong.
Yeah, that is true. The more simple the system installed, the better. If it didn't break, don't change it. Use the same equipment when you replace things. If it's working fine, the same type of equipment. Yeah, and like, yeah, the less things, the better. Yeah, things is happens when you want to add a thing. Add more things to the give more features to the thing. The way that it works until now is fine. The only problem that I feel from now, okay, now we have some kind of static. But let's say it's a matter of what I see the problem for me in my particular situation is rain. But that affected me. That's affect other people, each one to their own. In my situation, let's say, I can hit N2ROW repeater from inside my home with a low power with a dummy antenna, whatever. To hit our repeater, I have to use an antenna that is located on the roof. And that's how it works with me with our radio club. And it depends where the repeater is located, mainly, I think, because it doesn't matter on, I don't know what. But whatever they said before, I heard that they mentioned about the change. Replacing, not maybe yes, the antenna, but the main thing is the antenna and the high. If they do that, and they don't have to play with the amplifier or things like that, don't modify anything for sure. Just write the antenna and that's it. It works great, and that's it. You don't have to touch anything else. Like you said, Roy, less inter, more simple. It works great. But
I think this kind of goes back about 6 years ago. We were planning on upgrading the antenna for many vaguely similar reasons. Again, if you could get the elevation up, that would be fantastic, because again, all of this UHF VHF is point to point, so the higher you can get the central repeater's antenna, the better, you know, range we can get in general. You know, you can force things with a higher gain antenna or with an amplifier to a degree, but amplification will only take you so far. I tried that when I first started out, and I had a lousy place for my antenna, and I thought I was going to make it up with amplification, and it barely made a difference. And I raised the antenna up into the sky, and it was amazing the amount of benefit for that. So, you know, we sort of have this answer as far back as 6 years ago. It was just when COVID came, it kind of smacked us all silly.
With that, it came into my head the question, Roy. We are on technical on everything here. How much gain an antenna get? Of course, there might be a limit. Once you get certain height, you don't gain anything. You don't gain more, but there's the range from, let's say, from the floor up, how much gain could, let's say, in the compound, the VHF antenna, like we are getting the higher it is, how much more gain can we get, let's say, from where it is now if we add another, let's say, 5 meters up?
Okay, that's a very, very difficult thing to calculate. There's no simple equation because it's based on the topology of your environment. If you're living in the flatlands, elevation is not going to be quite as dramatic an effect as if you live in hilly valleys and such, or buildings that are very, very tall, where it can have a ridiculously important effect. So, you know, I can only tell you that the gain goes up, but I can't tell you by how much. You know, gain in general for antennas is problematic because most people think of gain in the same way that amplifiers work, in that you put in something with 1 watt and it comes out as 10 watts, you know, 10 times gain. With antennas, it has nothing really to do with the power output. It's power density, really. So the higher the gain for a given antenna, the more the same amount of radio wave energy is being squeezed into a smaller and smaller area along the radiation path of the antenna. So, you know, you don't get any additional output from a high gain antenna. You have the ability to point it at a specific a place on the horizon and get more of the radio waves to reach that antenna, you know, on the, you know, that you're looking to get.
Got you. So it's not a simple thing. A lot of things to evaluate on a situation like that. Another thing, the static on the repeater that we are hearing lately a lot also could be to have into consideration components from electronic components themselves that they might be causing static, as an example, capacitors that they are like already on the end of their working life. And then I heard you commenting, I think with Max, the difference between VHF and UHF, and that there's no really difference in general, that it depends on the crowd what they prefer. And is there maybe a difference on how they work, not on the side of the repeater or the equipment itself, from the side of the interference that they are getting from the equipment that they are around them, let's say a TV, radios, LEDs, or things like that, that they affect more the VHF spectrum for us than the UHF side? Back to you, Roy.
Yeah, I don't think it's a significant effect. I mean, yeah, different frequencies, you know, you might have interference from different components out there that has different spectral qualities. But, you know, I mean, you can make a case the exact opposite way. The free path loss goes up as you go up in frequency, I think, by the cube. So, you know, a higher frequency will dissipate faster than a lower frequency given free path loss. So, I mean, there's things that cause low frequencies to be better, high frequencies to be better, and you have to deal with how it ends up. And ultimately, the way it ends up, at least in the metropolitan area, is, you know, if you think back to your VHF and UHF usage, you really can't listen to any kind of background sounds and be able to tell which band you're on. They're not really different. You go to things like 80 meters versus 10 meters, there's a difference, but not really with UHF, VHF, at least in my experiences.
I always thought that the people that they live in the city, they prefer to use a UHF because of buildings and all that, they get the better bouncing of signal and less problems with the interfering. And on people that they live out of the city, they prefer VHF, they don't have that problem, and they have a better propagation because of the VHF. It gets a longer and decent transmission for receiving and transmitting. So that's a pre-concept that I had on the thing. Might not be that far from that, but it's a thing of seeing what people do, right? You picture it more like it's more what people prefer, but I thought it was more like on how the thing works according to where you are.
Not from what I'm aware of. I mean, for the most part, you know, you kind of ask old timers, you know, what's the benefit of UHF, and they'll tell you that, you know, the band spectrum is much wider, so you can get a frequency allocation for more repeater stations. Multipath, you know, again, to one degree or another, you're going to get approximately the same problems with multipath on UHF and VHF. So, you know, maybe on a theoretical type of evaluation, but in a practical evaluation, you know, people just kind of go to every band. You know, they'll even go into 220, and, you know, there's probably no good reason reason to go to 220 except that it's there and you sort of want to keep it active. But I mean, you know, it's neither 70 centimeters nor 2 meters. But again, I think it's more of a function of where you got the frequency allocation and what the repeater is capable of, whether it's a monobander for 70 or two meters or such. So again, I've never really had listened to the conversations where guys said, you know, we must do it on UHF because of this, that, and the other thing. It's more like I got this old repeater that works on UHF and a duplexer. Let's see if we can get an allocation nearby and we'll tweak the duplexer.
Okay. You get all the equipment for people, you get whatever you get, right? But let's say a radio club that doesn't have anything and will have to take a decision VHF and UHF. I think they will go more for the UHF side, right? Duplexer cavities on the VHF are very expensive, I think, right? Compared to UHF equipment. Or am I wrong on that? And apart from that, the rest is the same, right? UHF might need a better cable, better coax to get the signal from the repeater to the antenna. And that's another expensive to consider. There are a lot of things to evaluate, but once you get everything, if you get everything for free or donations, things like that, then yeah. Okay, Roy. That was my concerns over there. Was listening to you guys, and yeah, very interesting net on the whole thing conversation. So come find ideas to the mind. KB2OVM.
Well, I'm glad you liked it, Axel. That's encouraging. You know, people are not really utilizing the technical net. They're not quite really utilizing the repeater, but this seems to be a kind of significant problem all over the country. You know, repeaters that used to be extremely active are now being used much less. So I'm glad you enjoyed it, and I hope you tune into future ones, and we'll see what we got. Usually now, I think the primary interest in people is to get frequency allocation. Because the UHF band is much wider, you got a better chance of having a non-allocated frequency allocated in your name. So that might be it. Again, the duplexers are kind of expensive. You know, the difference in weight is one thing, but the difference in the ultimate price that most commercial companies charge you is not that incredibly different for UHF versus VHF. So again, I don't think people think too much about the initial expense. Again, they're very kind of looking around to see if someone's willing to donate things. That's probably the primary, most important aspect of any club's repeater is how much of this is free.
Got you on that perspective. I thought that they cost like very expensive, the VHF cavities and the UHF. They don't got it, man. I thought that. Why did I think that? I think I went once on eBay to just take the price. And then on the UHF side, you always find the mobile ones. Okay, you say, okay. Then you have the Chinese ones, they're super cheap. You think, okay, maybe the commercial, good American made cavities are probably double or triple the price from the Chinese ones. But you would never think that they cost close by cost of the size. I would say. Probably the design is a little different. Yeah, but JMRS or other repeaters that you see that they sell here and there that they offer you with the cavities, they put a mobile one. They don't put a high grade whatever. Yeah, not a comment on that. I try to connect here, so I try to connect when I can. It's like I'm usually like very busy at night working, and I try to go out or walk. Sometimes I do it in the morning, mostly not in the night. I used to do it in the night before. I had more time in the night, but now it's on the day, more sunlight. Okay, well, we're going to be leaving. Thank you so much for the net over here, and very interesting topic over here. This is KB2OVM. Back to you, Roy.
Very good. 73, Axel. Have a safe day. Be well, and we'll talk to you down the line.
Thank you so much, Roy. Good night there. KB2OVM, please.
Okay, this net has been brought to you by the Kings County Radio Club. Our club is an ARRL affiliated club based in Brooklyn, New York, and we meet on the first Wednesday of each and every month. Our next meeting will be November 5th, which will be a hybrid meeting and a virtual meeting using Zoom software. Club members will be emailed the details of the meeting. The physical location of the in-person meeting is the Knights of Columbus at 1511 10th Avenue. Non-members wishing to join a general club meeting can email me, AC2GS, with some form of identification for the required link. Although our meetings informally begin after 7 p.m., our formal regular general meeting starts at 8 p.m. and continues until anywhere from 9 to 9:30, depending upon the number of points that are covered. We have a weekly 2-meter club net every every Tuesday night at 9 p.m. on this repeater. This Technical Net meets on the second and fourth Wednesday of each month at 9 p.m. And we also sponsor a 10-meter net every Sunday morning at 11 a.m. on 28.380 upper sideband. We offer an audio stream of our KC2RC repeater on the internet, as well as our 10-meter net using browser. Type in stream.kc2rc.com. Members as well as non-members are welcome to participate, although we do appreciate it when our fellow hams join our club. And as always, an application is readily available on our club's website. If you would like to contact the host of this Technical Net, simply address your email to tech@kc2rc.com. We maintain an active website at www.kingscountyradioclub.com or www.kc2rc.com, which offers archives of this Technical Net, amateur radio news, and original articles and technical forums. Please visit our website and participate. Our website hosting services were generously donated by the local Brooklyn-based web hosting company, Three Aliens Web Hosting, who we would like to thank. As the great philosopher Jimi Hendrix once said, knowledge speaks, but wisdom listens. So try to listen more and talk a bit less. It's time to roll this all up and shut it all down, but we'll be back November 12th, and you're all welcome to join us. Thanks to all the people that participated tonight, especially my co-host, Bob, KD2NVB. Without you guys, I would just be talking to myself. So this is Roy, AC2GS, going clear and getting the heck out of here. Until next time, this is AC2GS clear.